a single email unearthed from the sprawling Jeffrey Epstein document dumps has sent shockwaves through anyone paying attention. In 2003, investigative journalist Edward J. Epstein, no relation to Jeffrey, but a longtime chronicler of espionage, cover-ups, and institutional deceit, Edward Epstein reached out directly to Ghislaine Maxwell with the casual yet loaded invitation, "Any interest in joining a proposed shadow commission on 9/11? This wasn't some random outreach. The former Harvard professor was floating the idea of an alternative inquiry into the attacks, one presumably free from the constraints and compromises that plagued the official 9/11 commission.
What diminishes the idea of a conspiracy in my mind is not that one can't think of a good reason why one couldn't put a conspiracy together, but it's the passage of time. One has to take that into their reckoning as we covered, you know, decade after decade."
Maxwell's inclusion on the invite list speaks volumes about the overlapping circles of power, influence, and potential blackmail that Epstein's operation allegedly cultivated. Why would a man known for dissecting government whitewashes think the partner of Jeffrey Epstein belonged on such a panel? The official 9/11 Commission report, released in 2004, has long been accused of being a carefully curated exercise in selective truth rather than unvarnished accountability. Glaring omissions like the collapse of the World Trade Center Building 7, ignored Saudi connections to the hijackers, eyewitness accounts of bombs by Barry Jennings in World Trade Center 7.
Now, Barry Jennings, you're on the 8th floor. You work for the City Housing Department. Explain to me the moment of impact.
Well, me and Mr. Hess, the corporation counsel, were on the 23rd floor. I told him we got to get out of here. We started walking down the stairs. We made it to the 8th floor. Big explosion. Blew us back into the 8th floor. And I turned to Hesh, I said, "This is it. We're dead. We're not going to make it out of here."
Entering Building 7 together before the strike on the South Tower at 9:03 a.m., Jennings and Hess were surprised to discover that the office had been abandoned. Receiving a phone call from his superior, Jennings was warned to leave the building immediately. Descending via the stairwell, Jennings and Hess reached the 6th floor before an explosion blew them back up to the 8th floor, trapping them inside the building. After 7 years of investigation, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, determined that the building had not come down due to explosives or controlled demolition, as many alleged, or due to structural damage from the collapse of the Twin Towers, an explosion in the building's fuel oil systems, or any of the other suggestions that had been put forward and retracted by NIST over the course of its investigation. Instead, NIST spokesman Shyam Sunder insisted that the building had collapsed due to ordinary office fires.
"For the first time, we have shown that fire can induce a progressive collapse."
The commission's own co-chairman, Lee H. Hamilton, later admitted significant limitations, including restricted access to classified materials and pressure to produce a unified narrative that avoided rocking too many boats in Washington, D.C.
"If it's an act of war and it's hiding things, which everyone on your commission knew that the Pentagon was changing their stories, lying to you, and it's a cover-up of an act of war, and under Article 3, Section 3 of the Constitution, it's treason. So unless we get to the very bottom of it, then we're still talking treasonous exposition."
"This is a longer conversation. I'm not sure you ever get to the bottom of it."
"We have to, or we can't save our country, sir."
"I don't think, well, if that's the condition upon which we're going to be saving our country, because the problem is it's a 30-year-old conspiracy."
The report's focus on systematic issues conveniently sidestepped naming names like Larry Silverstein.
"I remember getting a call from the fire department commander telling me that they were not sure they were going to be able to contain the fire. I said, you know, we've had such terrible loss of life. Maybe the smartest thing to do is pull it. And they made that decision to pull. And then we watched the building collapse."
And the rapid removal of debris before thorough forensic analysis could take place.
"I'm also told that military heavy equipment will be brought in, bulldozers, cranes, things of that nature, to go in there as soon as they possibly can."
What ties these threads together is the persistent whisper that 9/11...
"One of the most important things to me in my life is to get things right and to tell the truth and to be accurate. That's why they say Alex Jones is right. But it's not just our news, our prediction, our information that are incredibly accurate. It's the products. And out of all the amazing supplements at thealexjonesstore.com, our methylene blue, ultra methylene blue, is the best you're going to find on the market. It's so good for your body. Instant, clean, amazing energy. You owe it to yourself, if you sat on the fence, to go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get ultra methylene blue. And believe me, you are going to want to reorder it again. We have an 84% reorder on that product. No other supplement anywhere has anything even close. That is how amazing it is. Secure your ultra methylene blue now at thealexjonesstore.com. And thanks for keeping us on the air.
Repeat what you said is happening. You feel in the...
I feel like that stuff in my fingers. I feel tingling fingers.
There's the camera. Blast them with full power right there.
Ah!
Yeah!
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Monday evening. Hope everybody's doing well. We got a ton of stories to cover. Of course, last night was the Super Bowl, or the Superb Owl, as those of us in the know like to call it. Yeah, actually, this whole weekend has been a series of just crazily satanic ceremonies. I didn't even grab the video, guys. We can grab the video from the opening of the Winter Games, or I'm not even sure, was it the Winter Olympics or the Winter Games, but was it the Winter Olympics? Because I thought it was at first, then I kept seeing him called something else. We were like, no, these are the Winter Games. And it's like, what? Aren't they called the Olympics? But the opening ceremony was just straight up a giant upside down five-pointed star and just like flames, and it just looked like hell. It just looked straight up like hell. And of course, this is the follow-up to the last Olympic opening ceremony, which featured the transgender Last Supper desecration. So I just wonder, like, the average person, it used to be that you'd go find Jay Dyer or Alex Jones a day after a big event like this, the Olympics, the Oscars, whatever it is, and they would have to dissect the symbolism. And you could either be interested in that and want to know about it, or you could think it's all kookery and who cares if they're doing weird stuff. It's cool, it's hip, whatever. But like nowadays, is anybody questioning this? Anybody, any of the normies there looking at the giant inflamed pentagram rising up from hell and go, this is kind of weird. Is this about the Olympics still? Are we still doing something about sports, or is this just strictly an occult ceremony now? Are they dropped all pretense and are just like, welcome to the 251st occult induction ceremony. Prepare to have your mind wiped. I don't know. It's all very in your face at this point. So we'll get into that. We'll get into the reaction of it. And I'm gonna do my best as a general in this information war. I'm going to do my best to dissect the propaganda that we are confronted with and try to explain what makes it so incredibly effective. Because there's a problem on the right that people like to act like the propaganda doesn't work, or that it's ineffective. Now, there may be some nuance here. I'm willing to admit that, maybe these things are less popular than they seem. But I like to keep my finger on the pulse of the normie world. I like to hang out with people that aren't political. I like to ask family members that aren't, necessarily overtly political what they think about it. And I like to go into Facebook and Reddit and all the places where the normies hang out and see what they're saying. And I hate to break this to everybody. I hate to be the bearer of bad news here. But in my opinion, from my observations, the vast majority of the average normie football watching public both A, thought the halftime performance was amazing and uplifting and very American. They actually thought that. And they think that, things like the blue sticker ad, the anti-Semitism ad propaganda was deeply moving and very powerful and a good message. And you cannot like either of these things. You can recognize the very, very deep-seated subversion trying to tear down the American culture from the inside that both of these things represent. I'm right there with you. I understand as well as anybody else, but I can also acknowledge the effectiveness of powerful and well-made propaganda. And if you just want to act like it wasn't good propaganda because you disagree with the message, then you're tactically or strategically not a benefit to the information war. See, I'm the type of person that goes, hey, the enemy just launched a major attack, major offensive, and they succeeded in a couple key points. And in order to combat that and confront that and to wage a successful defense against that, you have to acknowledge it and you have to, you know, understand what it was that made their attack so successful so you can counter it next time. But a lot of people out there want to go, that attack didn't even matter. It didn't even count. Who cares? It's like, that's not the way you win the war, is it? By lying about the effectiveness of the enemy's attacks. Because look, if you're waging the info war along with us, if there's one thing you have to acknowledge, it's that the enemy is really, 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 really good at propaganda. It's okay. It doesn't mean he's right. It doesn't mean that they're better than us in any way. It's just, you know, some things they don't do well. Managing a country, like actually convincing people with their arguments and logic. But when it comes to propaganda, when it comes to shaping the minds of people, that's what they're best at. And it turns out if you're good at that, it kind of nothing else really matters. If you're good at that part of it, you can be terrible at everything else and people will still love you and vote for you. And so we have to learn that message because think about this. Their propaganda, the methods they use and the techniques that they use are so good. They're so powerful that they can convince the entire nation of the most ridiculous lies you've ever heard, but undercutting just basic human observation like men are men and women are women. They can get the entire country to go along with opposing that because of the power of their propaganda. That's how good their propaganda is when it's based entirely on self-evidently false lies. Now imagine if you could use some of those same tactics to tell the truth. Like, we're already sort of fighting an even fight because while they have all of the sophisticated methods, they have all of the networks and all of the production companies and all of the ability to package their argument, we're still winning because despite not having any of that, we do have the truth on our side. Now imagine if we use some of the tactics that they use, because the tactics themselves are not dishonest necessarily, right? It's just it's almost a technology. It's like a psychic technology that they're wielding to convince people of certain things. And I was saying this on X. People were getting really mad at me because I don't understand it. People cannot parse. They cannot like separate like objective truth from their own subjective view. Like, okay, yes, you as a person who's opposed to the political messages being sent did not enjoy the halftime show. I wouldn't expect you to. But you should have the humility and the intelligence to be able to say, if I was a normie, this would have been extremely convincing. This would have been extremely compelling. This would have been whatever, whatever. Doesn't mean that you liked it. It means you have the ability to understand it. I think it was Aristotle. Whatever. I'm not going to start quoting philosophers at you. But basically, the mark of an intelligent man is to be able to consider opinions he disagrees with. And that's all that we're doing here. And I had people on X respond to me, oh, so what, we should be making ads with like white people covered in dirt with like voiceovers about how bad the globalists are and just like want to make people cry? And it's like, well, yeah, actually, yes. Yes, you should. Right. No, that's exactly what it's about. Whether you like it or not, people make decisions on the basis of emotion. You can't argue against somebody's emotion. You just look like a bad person to them. And so again, it's not dishonest because white people really are being killed. We really are being genocided. Our countries really are collapsing into chaos and misery. There really are a million little girls in the UK that were systematically raped by gangs. Yeah, they're suffering. Nobody cares because it's never been presented in a Hollywood movie yet. It was Aristotle. Look at that. It is the mark of an educated mind to be able to entertain a thought without accepting it. Thank you, Aristotle. Very smart. You know, he taught Alexander the Great. So yeah, we need to emotionally appeal to people because that's the level that the argument is being made on. Again, it's not about dishonesty or you know, manipulation of people. It's just about understanding what is a good story and what isn't. What is a compelling narrative and what isn't. You're going to convince a hell of a lot more people if you could show a 5-minute, you know, narrative depicting what it was like for a girl to be seduced by Jeffrey Epstein, right? If you could show the narrative of a little girl thinking that she'd just gotten Willy Wonka's golden ticket, you know, she'd just been plucked from obscurity by a billionaire who had connections in whatever industry she wanted to enter into. Now, this is what they do. Jeffrey Epstein would take some of his ill-gotten, you know, corrupt spy money. He'd funnel $100,000 to some musical camp, Interlochen, I think it was called. And then he goes there and walks around, gets a tour of the facilities from the people who he gave money to, when really what he was doing was shopping for girls. And so he's going around looking at all of the preteen girls there who all got some sort of scholarship or are proficient in their instruments and have dreams of becoming professional musicians. And he used his access through donating money to get to these camps to go interview the girls. So you can imagine being a little girl who maybe comes from a broken household, impoverished. Maybe you get a lucky break, and because of your skill and talent and dedication to the instrument that you're learning, you get to go to this camp. And then here comes this billionaire, this globe-trotting billionaire who could, with a wave of his hand, put you on a path towards becoming first chair at the New York Philharmonic. He has that power, and he's telling you he's going to do this to you. And you can watch the process as that little girl and all of her bright dreams are slowly ground down until she's like a husk of a person, having been abused and used and forced to participate in the most despicable acts, but always dangling, you know, the fortune and you know, future success in front of her. Like, yeah, a short film depicting that is going to be a hell of a lot more compelling and convincing than a flowchart with a picture of Jeffrey Epstein's head and a picture of Bill Clinton's head and a line in between, right? I mean, so much of what the right wing does, like, we argue as if the people that we're arguing with are like us, are willing to look at facts and willing to actually determine what the reality is. We'll actually understand the implications that are being drawn. That's fine for us. That's fine for intelligent, informed, thoughtful, open-minded people. The vast majority of people that we have to win over, it's not an option. Okay, you can't just impose things on people in this world, not in the way it's set up now, not if you're us, right? We got to convince people. We got to reach out to these people. Again, I had other people going, it's sports ball, dude, who cares? It's like, well, half the country cares about football more than they care about anything else. We have to reach these people. We have to reach out to these people. We have to connect with these people somehow. So I don't know, you know, it's like, yeah, I also am not a big fan. I think it's like unbelievably creepy. I was saying this the other day, 'cause last time I was traveling, I was just walking around the airport and every single guy I saw looking at their phone was watching sports stuff. Every single one. Every single adult male in the airport. And it wasn't even like football season or baseball season. They're watching hockey clips. They're watching commentary on soccer. Like, they don't care. They just want something to watch, and sports is all they care about. That's such a huge portion of our population. It's like, I think it was the Jeffrey Epstein release that people were showing, or something very recently, where it was, you know, everybody on X is freaking out about this thing, and then people are showing the graphs of Google interest, Google searches over time. And it's like, whatever we're talking about, Jeffrey Epstein, and, you know, the line's going along and sort of spikes a little bit and keeps going. Meanwhile, the Seahawks had just won the latest playoff game. And so the interest for Seahawks is just straight up. And it's like way higher than anything having to do with Jeffrey Epstein or anything else. And you can condemn that. I condemn that. I think that's a sign of our wasted potential and our, you know, individual failures to actually prioritize what's actually important rather than a stupid ball game for children. But it doesn't matter what I think about it. That's the fact. That's the reality. That's what people are interested in. That's where their attention goes. That's where they put in their time and money and effort. So that's fine. It's just reality. So now we have to contend with that. Now you have to package your arguments in ways that they understand and they can break through the bread and circus firewall that they have distracting them constantly. So again, I was saying one way to get into that conversation during the Super Bowl, say something like, you know, I used to love the Patriots, but man, ever since I learned about their owner, I can't support them anymore. And of course, whoever you're there is with can be like, what? What about the owner? What about him? You can be like, oh, well, you don't know he's in the Epstein files? Epstein files, what's that? Or, well, I bet a lot of the owners are in the Epstein files. What's the problem with him? Well, okay. Isn't that concerning? Isn't that interesting? What's the problem with being in the Epstein files? I don't know. What's the problem? Oh, well, you don't know about South Florida massage parlor? You don't know about the Jewish supremacy that we're dealing with? And this is another word that I think, like, again, our enemies have actually set the table for us. Our enemies have done a lot of the work already in getting the average American, like basically forming their thought pathways in certain directions that we can take advantage of. Again, I had somebody on X going, oh, yeah, totally. This is what a win is spurging out of your families while everybody's trying to watch football or whatever. Like, look, guys, the left has spent the last 10 years indoctrinating people into the understanding of certain concepts like unearned privilege, right? Okay, well, then that's the language that you need to use when you're talking to them. When they have spent the last 10 years demonizing concepts of white supremacy, then you should ask the people who think that that's all real, who think that white supremacy is a real threat, well, do you care about Jewish supremacy? And if not, why? Because if they're consistent, they'll say, of course I oppose that. Just like I oppose white supremacy, I oppose all supremacy. And if they say, no, that's actually fine, then we got a whole other issue to talk about. But talking about this stuff in the language that these people understand, that they talk to each other in, is extremely effective. And you can take the mindset that's been actually physically implanted in their head by the endless propaganda and social programming that they aren't even aware that they've been subjected to. But you can utilize that. You can weaponize that. You can, in fact, use that. And you can go, okay, you seem like you really genuinely don't like racial superiority. Have you read the Epstein files? Do you understand where the real racial superiority is coming from and the damage that it's doing? And do you want to oppose that now, too? And that works. It can work. I had people again on X talking to me going, yep, this is exactly how I did it. Totally red-pilled, you know, my family, got into this big conversation, wider conversation about psychological operations and the way propaganda is being used. And I mean, it's up to y'all. You got to have these conversations. You got to talk about this. I had other, because I was also saying that, you know, I think that the average American normie really enjoyed the halftime show. They liked it. They thought it was uplifting and powerful and even wholesome to a certain degree. I'll read you the articles about it. And again, you can not like that. You can hate me for saying it. But no one's going to be convinced by you just like telling them they don't like a thing that they actually do like. Anyway, we'll get into all of this. And I'll break down exactly how some of the psychological operations are being utilized right now. But let's begin today, as we do every day, with our daily dispatch. The last 20 minutes, Derek's had his hand over that button, waiting for me to pitch to it. I was like, I'll go to it right off the bat. Here it is, your daily dispatch for Monday, the 9th of February, 2026. Bad Bunny's Super Bowl halftime show was expected to provoke. Did it? Asks the Washington Post. They say, no, it was actually really good. The show nodded to Puerto Rican injustices and highlighted some hip thrusts. But despite preemptive outrage from Trump, the superstar evoked wholesome values that meshed with the sentiment of the big game. Now, again, just so how provocative was it on a scale from 1 to 10, with 10 being Justin Timberlake exposing Janet Jackson's breast in the wardrobe malfunction that prompted a 2004 federal investigation? They put it at a 3. Basically, about as non-controversial as you can get. But this, of course, is a strategy and a technique that they're using. There was nothing on the face of it. I mean, there were some things that were objectionable. I object to some of the people doing the stuff that they were doing. But to be honest, here's my take on it. You know what pissed me off more than the Bad Bunny halftime show was the fact that immediately after the coin flip, the first commercial break, right after the Pledge of Allegiance or the Star Spangled Banner, the first thing, I'm sitting there with my kids and all of our cousins and everybody's watching it because, yeah, I'm an American. I try to continue to participate in cultural moments, even when I know they're going to be poisoned to people's brains. But the first thing that it goes to immediately as the game starts is a commercial break for a Scream movie where you've got some sort of serial killer in a mask, like trying to stab people. And it's like, really, really, the first commercial break, the instant that the game begins, is just like traumatizing, violent images. That, to me, is probably more psychologically damaging than seeing people twerk, to be honest with you. So, like, I didn't think this was, what Bad Bunny did was outrageous, but it deliberately avoided any overwhelming, provocative stuff because people wanted to look at it and go, oh, that wasn't so bad. Oh, they didn't hit you, bang us over the head with it. But the whole thing was infused with subtle messages, the entire point of which is white America is being conquered by non-whites, and that's a cause for celebration. And in fact, the vicious hatred they have towards us, Native American people, they classify as love so they can feel good while they commit genocide. And of course, these people who write these articles are not blind to the implications. They're covering them up, and they are deliberately downplaying them, which they never do in any other situation. Somehow they're able to hear the most, vague dog whistles, about white supremacy or whatever else. But when it's just obviously a giant, slap in the face to white America as they sing in Spanish and have a whole, halftime show in a language the vast majority of Americans don't understand, that suddenly the subtleties of the messaging goes right by them there. It's completely ridiculous. But again, it's about understanding the power and the techniques and the methods by which they use propaganda so that we can A, counteract their propaganda, and B, create propaganda of our own that is even better because we have the truth on our side and love, actual love, not whatever the crap this is. Meanwhile, Epstein accomplice Ghislaine Maxwell seeks Trump clemency before testimony. Jeffrey Epstein's accomplice Ghislaine Maxwell refused on Monday to answer questions from a congressional panel, but said she was prepared to speak if granted clemency by U.S. President Donald Trump, which they've been floating for a while and would be the dumbest thing ever, so it's probably going to happen. Meanwhile, Massey calls on Lutnick to resign over Epstein ties. Representative Thomas Massey on Sunday pushed for Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick to resign after his name appeared in files linked to the convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. We'll get back to that in just a moment. Maxwell invokes the Fifth Amendment, a closed-door virtual oversight house deposition. And finally, TPUSA's All-American Halftime Show becomes highest-watched U.S. YouTube live stream with 6.17 million concurrent viewers. So that's pretty good. Again, that's huge. That's successful, and I like that TPUSA did that. But this is not a recipe for success. We cannot create alternative, parallel, American traditions because our American traditions have been hijacked. We have to reclaim those.
All right, I'm going to be very clear about this. I've done an hour and a half of live broadcasts that have not plugged one time. You're not going to get economic, cultural, military, spiritual analysis like this anywhere else. It's not a power trip. I've been blessed by God with the best crew, the best guests, the best intel. But it's up to you to boost this information. All I ask is that you share the live feeds, you share the articles. We get shut down early next month, which is, I haven't made the announcement yet, but this is it. God keeps coming through with miracles, but it just looks like it. You'll see major movement soon. I'll just stop there. It's okay. But I'm asking all of you that have been on the fence, you share articles, videos, wonderful, keep doing it. I thank you, humbly. I'm not mad you never supported us financially, but the products are great. I'm asking everyone to do one thing. Go to thealexshowstore.com today and one click, become a VIP for $30 a month. Now, you instantly get $40 to spend in the store, special deals, special offers, everything gets a discount when you do that. It's just like Amazon Prime.
But let's just say you don't want ultramethylene blue or Shilajit or Irish sea moss or bovine colostrum that's so incredible. Not a sexy name, but sexy results. Maybe you don't want to get any of the great Patriot t-shirts. Just be a VIP every month. A donation of $30 to our sponsor, Bigly, that owns the Alex Jones Backup Network and the site. There's all sorts of behind-the-scenes attacking them. They're big boys, too. You know, Nate was pardoned by the president for trying to save a woman on J6. He did save her. But, I mean, these are patriots. Just go to the site, upper right-hand corner, VIP Club. Just commit. You can cancel any time, so it's not much of a commitment. But each month, you charge $30 on the first day of the month. Just be a VIP. Pledge to us $30 a month. You've got NPR and PBS getting billions of dollars a year from the feds and then begging constantly for your money to shovel communism and pedophilic garbage on you. We just sell you the very best supplements you've ever seen, the widest selection of Patriot apparel, badass knives, and we're swinging for the fences. I'm totally committed. I've given up 95% of my assets, which weren't ever that big. I could care less. Actually, I'm actually happier not having a few things to deal with. But the point is that we're now up against the wall. So I need you to simply become a VIP. And then you got a bad month, whatever the issue is, cancel. And then you get more money in a few months. You know, say you're like blue collar, whatever, hardworking person, totally respectable, the bedrock of this country, $30 a month, you get a little bit of problem, cancel. It's free. And then a few months later, things are going well again, become a VIP again. But for all you middle class people and all you wealthy people that aren't investing in the fight against the tyrants, you are crazy. All of you that have means should be a VIP at theolishowstore.com. It's just a $30 donation. If you don't want to spend the $40 you get to buy great products and just want to let it, you can be a member and just pile up $40 each month. And at the end of the year, what's 12 months? You know, you've spent X and then gotten way more in and then, you know, do all your Christmas shopping. I don't care how you do it. I'm just saying, become a VIP. One click. Hit one button. I'm an attack dog, folks. I'm born for this. I'm bred for this. I love this. I'm fearless, other than failure. I have no fear. All I'm saying is please become a VIP right now at thealexshowstore.com. That's the simple commitment. VIP. 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 And that's the term they use for it. I would call it Paul Revere Fund. I would call it tip of the spear. There's nowhere you can support where you're getting bigger results against the enemy. Bang for the buck. It's just true. I'm not bragging. I'm very humble. I am your weapon. I am committed to you like a dog is to its owner. I mean, it's true. I am your servant. I am here to defend you and defend your family and defend your freedom because I'm defending mine as well, and we're all in this together. You understand? I am so committed to you at the very base of my soul. And I just simply want to see you awaken in the InfoWar. And there's nowhere better with one simple move than being a VIP at TheAlexShowStore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Debating whether to keep talking about the Super Bowl or to move on to some of the crazy Epstein stuff that's been revealed. And I mean, it is wild. It is wild what has been revealed. Now, today, you know, as of last night, looked like it was going to be a crazy day. So far, nothing insane has popped off yet. But Benjamin Netanyahu is going to be in America on Wednesday to talk about bombing Iran again, going in whole hog this time, probably. We can't just, you know, can't just do one of these simple missions. It's going to have to be a full-fledged thing. But as of last night, you had all these things combining on Monday. Beginning Monday, the DOJ will allow all members of the U.S. Congress, House, and Senate to view the unredacted versions of the Epstein files. So I don't know when they're going to get out of the skiff from that, but I look forward to Thomas Massey and others telling us some interesting developments there. Alexander Dugin, you know, famous on Putin's brain, but he's just famous Russian intellectual, said Monday could easily become the most volatile day in the history of the modern world. It's kind of troubling prediction. American B-2 bombers capable of carrying nuclear weapons have landed at UDED Air Force base in Qatar in conjunction with tensions with Iran. So we now have nuclear-capable bombers in the Middle East, as well as half of the total number of C-17s that we have, I think it is. Basically, our entire Air Force is now on the way or stationed in the Middle East. And then on Monday, today, at approximately 6 a.m., the Capitol Police announced they would be working on with our federal partners on a routine training exercise on the grounds of the U.S. Capitol. Please do not be alarmed if you see emergency vehicles and low-flying helicopters. Okay, so I posted that last night going, we should be ready for today. So far, nothing has popped off, but I think most people that are paying attention are very concerned about what happens next with Iran, as Wednesday is a deadline. And it was right around one of these exact deadlines that the Fordo bombing operation was kicked off in the 12-day war was, you know, happened right before the deadline that Trump set it on Iran back in June. So everything is still very much in motion, and it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if nuclear war was the, you know, go-to solution for all these people asking questions about Epstein these days. But I want to do a little patting ourselves on the back and a little flashback history. Yeah, U.S. urges American ships to stay as far as possible from Iranian waters. U.S. Maritime Administration advisory comes after a first round of indirect talks between Washington and Tehran. Again, we can get back into that, but so far nothing's happened, but we'll keep an eye on things, so stay tuned here. And actually, you know what? I'm going to take a moment before we get into the Epstein stuff. I'm going to continue on the football stuff, the halftime show stuff. Because again, I think people are misapprehending what actually happened last night at the Super Bowl. I actually think this Washington Post article, as you know, deliberately ignorant as it is to the reality of what was being portrayed during halftime, it's probably a pretty good read for how most Americans are thinking about it. If you were looking for political commentary, the closest that you got was the moment at the end when Bad Bunny, this artist, said, "God bless America" in English, and then proceeded to name all of the countries in the Western Hemisphere in geographical order from south to north. I thought it was funny. I saw other people going, yeah, this was all a subtle psychological operation to, you know, reaffirm the Don Rowe doctrine to try to frame all of the Western Hemisphere as sort of one political body, because that goes into the globalist plan to have basically 10 countries of all these conglomerate countries, which it does look like they're moving towards, with apparently Trump's Board of Peace being set up to replace the UN, like we told you so long ago. So this was the actual halftime show here. And again, people were going, nobody in the stadium liked it. It's like nobody in the stadium could see it. They're in a giant corn maze. Nobody in the stadium could tell what the hell was going on. No, this was not for the people in the stadium. This was for the people, the billion people watching on TV, much bigger audience than the 100,000 in the stadium. Again, this is not, it shouldn't be that difficult to understand to me. Weeks before he set on stage, Bad Bunny's halftime performance had already become a media event. There was rapturous anticipation from his millions of fans worldwide, and there was boycotting and indignation from right-wing figures who objected to hearing Spanish during the Super Bowl or erroneously claimed that Puerto Ricans are not Americans. Well, they're not really. Puerto Rico is just a landmass that we militarily occupied to a certain degree. But you know, half of the people in Puerto Rico are on welfare. I mean, Puerto Rico is basically, it's basically like our, you know, it's like incompetent son that we just have to take care of, even though he's an adult. That's kind of the family setup here. But again, these people, like the people at the Washington Post, are the type of people who will, you know, find a dog whistle like a needle in a haystack if they see something that they can in any way vaguely portray as secretly alerting people to the hidden white supremacist agenda, then they'll, you know, make it out as if it's an absolute fact that they've discovered some secret symbolism that they're revealing to everybody else. And yet having an entirely Spanish halftime show with a bunch of Spanish people celebrating their own countries, their own traditions in obvious replacement of American traditions. It's not that hard to see what's going on here. It's not that difficult to apprehend the underlying sentiment being expressed here. But the people of the Washington Post apparently totally missed that. And we're taking everything at just strictly face value and what it was ostensibly presented as, which is just funny because they don't do that for anybody else. And it's obvious to anybody what the real implications of all of this is. The conservative youth juggernaut Turning Point USA streamed its own alternative concert from a soundstage featuring Kid Rock, Brantley Gilbert, and two other mid-tier country artists. Its hosts slamming Bad Bunny for politically charged statements amid in recent Super Bowl guests for ostensibly risque acts. The superstar himself downplayed concerns, saying at an Apple press event on Tuesday that his performance would be a huge party. They don't even have to learn Spanish, he told radio host from the stage. It's better if they learn to dance. And, of course, he began his speech at the Grammys by saying, ice out. And people were worried that this would be some sort of overt, anti-ICE extravaganza, which, no, these people are more sophisticated than that. They're not going to do something that's going to fly in the face of the average American. They're going to do something that the average American can say, I like that. They had a marriage in it. There were kids running around. Like, that was so sweet. So wholesome what they were doing there. Of course, completely missing the underlying menace of all of it, which is clearly that you're being replaced and we're celebrating that and calling our murder of you love so that we can get away with it. It's just that should be obvious. But then came the discussion that we should have had a long time ago, and that is actually one aspect of a wider conversation that we've been having for a while, which is, of course, the substantial differences between seemingly very closely aligned countries. You talk about in Mexico, you talk about America, not a huge gulf of, culture here. Same with, America and Europe. I mean, if you're even just using, Roman letters, you're more similar to us than anybody else. When you talk about Mexico, you're talking about a former colony of a European state. You're talking about a people that had a revolution to create a republic. You're talking about a Christian nation. They're Catholic, we're Protestant, but how big is that difference? I mean, a lot of similarities between Mexico and America. You can find a lot of countries that are way more different than each other than America and Mexico. But even in the subtle differences, even in just the little changes, and again, I mean, you go to Mexico, it's a completely different place from America, but at least you can vaguely read the language. We have a lot of Mexican influence here in America, so we're used to some of it. I'm saying if you've ever traveled around, I remember I traveled around Europe for a while. After high school, I did a gap year, saved up money, and stayed in Europe, hopping trains for a while. So I thought, I'd do this. This is great. This is so easy. I can go to any country and feel at home. But then the next time I went to Europe, I went to Turkey first. And the fact that the language is scribbles and not English or Latin letters, it's like, oh my God, where I have no idea how to do anything, where I am, like the actual culture shock of being like, ooh, this is not the place I'm used to. Mexico, it ain't that different. The values are fairly similar. The religion is basically the same. It's not that different. But those minor differences are the difference between living in a third world hellhole run by drugs and gangs and murderers, or America, which for all of its history was an exemplar of no corruption, very little corruption at least. Obviously, there's always corruption in power structures, but the average American go to the DMV, get their license, and get out and not have to slap a 20 into anybody's hand for the convenience, right? You can start a business and you just file the business and the bureaucracy says, thank you for filing. Here's your, certificate and it's done. There's not a hand you have to grease. You don't have to know anybody. These seemingly minor differences between Mexico and America are the difference between heaven and hell. They're the difference between, it's kind of like, well, there's not a lot of physical difference between rape and sex, right? But one is amazing and beautiful and God-given, and the other is probably the worst crime you can commit. But they're like almost the same. There's just like a little bit of a difference. That's kind of the difference between Mexican culture and American culture. Seemingly, on the surface, not too much separates it. But Mexico is a place of horrors. It is a land of misery in a lot of cases. And I've got some videos to illustrate this. Hell, let's go to... I got a couple, actually. This one actually relates back to something we were talking about a few days ago. Clip 11, when I was talking about the traffic blocks, the roadblocks that people are doing in Minnesota, and saying they're not actually effective. They're not going to stop anybody who's ICE from going where they want to go. But then you have this video out of Mexico. This is clip 11, right? So here's this guy, you know, driving down the road. Let's go ahead and bring up the audio a little bit. This is in a Spanish-speaking country. I believe it is Mexico, but I can't quite tell. But you can see the street lines are in Spanish. He's going when suddenly the car in front of him slams on its brakes. Guns get out, and he has to floor it, runs one of them over, and then makes his escape. But that quick thinking, that lack of trust, saved his life. Right? An American, if you see a car pull over in front of you, you slow down, you put your hazards on. Ah, gee, what's going on here? And you know, before you're ready to react, they have a gun up to your head, and they're stealing your car and your kid along with it, perhaps, and there's nothing you can do. So just be ready for the world that they're creating. Be ready for a world of bad bunnies and Puerto Ricans and Mexicans, and just know that in Puerto Rico and Mexico, if a car stops in front of you on a on-ramp to the freeway, it's not because they want to tell you your headlight is out. It's not because they are having an emergency that they might need your help with. It's because they're about to rob and perhaps kill you because they can. And you have to be on your guard constantly and possibly willing to kill somebody like we just saw right there, running them over with your car, or else you die. So this would be one of the primary differences between Mexico and America. But it's just one of many. And I'm thinking maybe clip number 19 here. This is from Mexico City. And we can go ahead and roll it as B-roll. We don't need the audio. It's a car driving through Mexico City, and they have big, big roundabouts in Mexico City. And as you drive around this one, you see hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of faces, pictures, portraits. These are all the people who have disappeared in Mexico City. These are all of the people who at one point or another either pissed off the government or disobeyed the cartel, and who were disappeared and are either dead or working as slaves somewhere or being tortured, or perhaps they were beheaded and are hanging from a light pole. But I like living in a country where people don't just go missing by the dozens on a regular basis and the government says, well, nothing we can do about it, sorry. But that's the world with... That is America with our corruption meter turned up like two ticks. You go two ticks up from where we are now, and you're in total cartel chaos misery world, where you're getting robbed on the street by gangs wielding automatic guns while you're not allowed to own a gun, where the cartel can disappear entire families and the government refuses to even investigate. And by even hanging a sign with their picture saying missing could then put you on the hit list of the cartel. How do you deal with a world like that? Well, you make gangs, you join a gang yourself, you create a clan because you have to go out and get your own justice because the systems of justice that were established to hold these people to account are in the hands of the people doing it to you. So I don't want to live in that world, and that's the world they were celebrating at the halftime show yesterday. The third world and their mindset and the criminality and the just total lack of functional systems of governance, that's what they're bringing along with them. It's not good. It's actually horrifying. It's actually extremely, extremely dangerous. And then came the discussion of sexuality in the Hispanic world, and obviously we don't like stereotyping anybody here, but we can look at stats. But we can investigate the stats and perhaps come to some, frankly, uncomfortable conclusions from them. Like this, Ann Coulter has written extensively on this. Coulter's discussions on this topic span multiple chapters. She argues the Latin American, quote, peasant cultures normalize behaviors like child rape, incest, and gang rape, and she supports this with the following. One, North Carolinians for Immigration Reform and Enforcement reports from NC Fire, so that's North Carolina for Immigration Reform and Enforcement. They track child sex offenses, including rape, molestation, and statutory rape, allegedly committed by illegal aliens in North Carolina. In a 8.5-month period from 2013 to 2014, NC Fire reported 1,500 such cases, averaging about 176 per month. Examples included 350 in April 2014. She notes that more than 90% of the perpetrators in these reports are Hispanic. This appears in the book and her columns, e.g. Trump opponents take nuanced view of child rape and immigration privileges. The CDC shows that Hispanics are 7 times more likely than whites to give birth between the ages of 10 and 14. She uses this as a proxy for child rape or statutory rape, arguing it reflects cultural tolerances for sexual activity with minors in Latin American communities. Less than 2% of U.S. births are to girls 10 to 14 overall, but the rate is significantly higher among Hispanics. CDC vital statistics or related reports on adolescent fertility show the same thing. Nobody knows this, but there was a study done on the prevalence of child sexual abuse among non-white Hispanics. It's unbelievably gross. The total number of women reporting that they were abused as children, 77%. 78, actually, if we're rounding. Rubbed against by perpetrator was 65% of them, 66% of them. Fondled by any part of the victim's body was 60%. Touched the victim's private parts, 43%. Perpetrator showed his or her genitals, 40%. Was asked to touch the perpetrator's private parts, 23%. Shown pornographic material by perpetrator, 14%. But the total is 77% of non-white Hispanics interviewed claimed they'd been a victim. Women had claimed they'd been a victim of child sex abuse as children. Number of different sexual abuse types suffered. 18% said they only suffered one of those, so they were either fondled or they were shown pornography or they were whatever else. But 40% experienced two or three of these things. 41%, so again, nearly half, say that they experienced four or more of these. They were fondled, they were rubbed, they were showed pornography, they were whatever else. And this is fairly normalized. I mean, when 80%, 78% of your female population is saying this happened to them, it's not exactly an outlier case. Number of types of contact without physical contact was only 4%, but physical contact and both physical and non-physical contact makes up the vast majority of those. The number of different perpetrators, only 50% had one person do it to them, 30% had two or more, with 20% saying not stated. So again, while you may look at Mexico and see, you know, basically Americans just with kind of spicier food and a more Catholic vibe, the reality is that the American culture does not stand for the things that the Hispanic Latin American culture stands for. And whether that's abuse of children or criminal gangs, the tolerance that they show is why they are in the condition that they're in and why they're all fleeing their countries and coming here. But if we don't stop that process and if we don't reassert the superiority of our culture and the importance of maintaining our hard-nosed anti-corruption position in America, we're just going to become like them. And there's absolutely nothing stopping us from becoming South Africa or Mexico or Zimbabwe for that matter. We just have to assert. And in order to assert, we have to believe in the superiority of our culture. And for anybody paying attention, it should be self-apparent and obvious when you have things like just what I've showed you, just two examples literally from the last 24 hours of people attempting to be robbed and killed on the street or, and we, you know, I was talking about this with the good doctor. when I was hosting the Alex Jones Show. And he was saying the same thing, that you go right across the Rio Grande. I mean, you got Americana on one side, baseball fields and picnics and snow cones. And on the other side, you've got decapitated bodies hanging from light poles. And there's no big difference between these two places except who occupies the positions of power. So I just want everybody to be aware that when you're talking about all of the good things that come from Latin American culture, which there are plenty, they are very family-oriented. They're very, I mean, happy people celebrate. I mean, the Mexicans that live on my street are having a party every weekend. Little kids dancing, all wearing their tiny suits. It's adorable. It's great. You love it. But along with that good stuff comes absolutely horrible stuff, beyond horrible stuff, unimaginably horrible stuff for us Americans. So you have to ask yourself, is it worth it? And is it possible, is it at all feasible that we could both appreciate and enjoy the positive aspects of Latin American culture while not becoming a Latin America itself and not allowing tens of millions of foreigners from these countries come over here and supplant our traditions with their own? I think it's possible if we actually try really hard. We just can't celebrate what they celebrate and actually believe their lies, that somehow deliberately destroying the demographic makeup of a country is love. It's love because a bunch of idiots get to twerk in public now. Great. How wonderful. So we'll continue to, we'll move on actually. We'll move on to what's going on with Jeffrey Epstein and some of the more insane revelations from some of the recent emails, which do include what look an awful lot like admissions of cannibalism and more code words and the downfall of the UK government is happening as a result of all of this. And we'll get all of that all into all of that in the second hour. But I do want to tell you right now, we've got a very big bundle deal going on at thealexjonesstore.com. It's called the Gut and Brain Bundle. Repair the gut, power the brain. And if you group these items together, you get 50% off them all totally combined. So bovine colostrum plus, methylene blue tincture, methylene red tincture, all of them together, you'd be paying over $200. You can get them all today for just $99.99. That's over 50% off. Just go to thealexjonesstore.com, search Ultimate Gut and Brain Bundle. That's the Ultimate Gut and Brain Bundle, colostrum plus, ultramethylene red, ultramethylene blue, all for 50% off when you buy them together. Go there today, thealexjonesstore.com. You're not going to get a bigger sale on ultramethylene blue than 50% off. That is massive. Go today.
People can use this as a teaching moment that, you know, I see a lot of these people out there who think they can imitate Alex Jones, and they have never understood the amount of work that goes in to the detailed reports that you do. But the second part is, okay, if you're out there and you want to be Alex Jones or replicate Alex Jones, Alex teaches you the way to do it, just pay attention. One is learn history. Understand history. Understand what templates to look for. Once you understand that, you understand what the play is going to look like. And then you're just looking for who to cast in what roles, because you understand the broader course of history, how these things tend to operate, how assassinations tend to occur, how cover-ups tend to happen, how false flags occur, how staged events occur, how also could the various forms of COINTELPRO type psyops to infiltrate dissident movements to distract them from the real conspiracy into fake conspiracy in order to feed a fake conspiracies into people who otherwise would be investigating the real conspiracy. Also to act as a discrediting agent. So learn the methodologies, learn how to look at how to review sources, how to understand the psychology of the participants involved. Once you understand that, you can be much more accurate and predictive at what took place with more explanatory power and more predictive capacity. And that's what Alex does, is massive amounts of work that starts with understanding history.
Welcome to the Great Reset. Eat the bugs. You will own nothing, and you will be happy. Take the vaccine. Trust the science. Get your booster. Every crisis is an opportunity, and the world will be reshaped in our vision. Down with the globalists. Get ultramethylene red at thealexjonesstore.com.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.